podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to the Anfield Wrap. After Crystal Palace 0, Liverpool 0, a lot's happened in the last week. Lost to Real Madrid 5-2, we drew to Crystal Palace, the white paper review has come out, the manager has spoken about what it's doing in the summer, and we've got a Wolves game to look forward to. So Rob, you brought two cup of teas along to get through the next hour, is that why?
Yeah, it's a big hour. It needs a lot of tea.
It's a big hour, but before we start, I want to say thank you to our partner Access Sport. Alongside their popular sport education programmes, Access Sport also offers students the opportunity to use their passion for sports secure pathways into alternative industries, such as the public sector, where you can develop transferable skills for future employment. The one-year course for students aged 16 to 19 combines a level 2 diploma in physical preparation and employability with a public service pathway that focuses on practical learning, skill development, industry experiences and work opportunities, alongside their sport and football development. Building an enriched CV of experiences and skills while on the course provides students with the next steps onto their future careers within the largest employability sector in the UK. Careers include futures with the NHS, military, personal training and fitness, social services and more. So if you are a student or you're a guardian or parent of a student and you want to find out a bit more, you can visit access.sport.ac.uk/tour. Rob, I want to talk a little bit about Madrid because...
Why?
I want to do one question on it and then I want to move on and forget it ever happened until we have to play them again in a couple of weeks' time.
Okay.
I think we spoke at length about it in the aftermath, so if you want loads of analysis on the game, you can obviously listen to Tour Live last week or all of our paid content. But we, after the game, were talking about putting it in a box, leaving it to one side, it not impacting our season. But in the aftermath and with the hindsight now of the Crystal Palace game, do you feel like it might have been a bit more of a knock in confidence than we may be expecting?
I'm not sure where you start with the knocks and confidence we've sustained this season, really. Our confidence remains a fragile thing, and I think Palace shows, I know we're going to analyse it, but the fact that we don't get a goal, don't get over the line and get a win in that game is because we haven't got a bedrock of confidence behind us, because I think... in some respects, the game was like a lot of Liverpool Palace games, just without the Liverpool goals, because Liverpool were just that bit too nervy and edgy. So, yeah, the Real Madrid thing didn't help. But, look, at the end of the day, we scored two goals against Real Madrid, could have been three up against Real Madrid. We had the best half hour we've had, I don't know, in 18 months, well, certainly this season. I don't think we lacked potency going forward against Real Madrid. So I don't think confidence would have been knocked by that outcome in that respect. And both Salah and Nunes bag, although Nunes doesn't play against Palace, but it was defensively, I thought we were obviously a shambles against Real Madrid. And you feared that if there was going to be a knock in confidence, you could see nervy defending again and Palace scoring. So there is a positive from Palace, and no one's celebrating that point at all. But we did keep our third consecutive clean sheet in the Premier League. So to an extent, I don't think confidence, which wasn't high anyway, was knocked further as a result of the Real Madrid game.
Yeah, Jake, it's easy to say it wasn't obviously helped by the Real Madrid game. We were starting to build a little bit of momentum off the back of the Everton game and the Newcastle game, and the confidences looked a bit more full of confidence, particularly in that first half an hour, like we mentioned, against Madrid. And then at Palace again, It just looked like a team that didn't want to take unnecessary risks, that wasn't really pushing forward, that didn't really know where its place was again. And it felt like we've definitely been knocked back.
I think that's spot on, yeah. I think it would have been a big surprise and a big sort of a little bit of a sickening blow what happened in Madrid. I agree with what Rob said there, funny enough, in regards to the Crystal Palace game being a similar game than what we've seen, just what the Liverpool goals, but what wasn't similar is what happened at Anfield, really. You know, Fortress Anfield. In Europe, you know, that doesn't normally happen, does it? You know, we go 2-0 up and it's like, I've seen this before. But I hadn't seen what happened after it, and it just felt a little bit foreign watching that happen to Liverpool, and almost as if we were seeing a little bit of an end of something, I thought, as well, potentially. But onto the Crystal Palace game, I think we've obviously gone in there with the thought of being a little bit conservative, you know, away from home performance, where, you know, we don't get beat here more than we go and win it. And funny enough, when we played them at home, I actually feel like that was as well as we probably played in spells all season. And then they go up the other end and hurt us. So it just goes to show you that they do have the sort of quality to hit us on the break and on the attack, if we are going for it.
yeah, Adam, you know, it's a boring game when you have to skip right to the end of Match of the Day and you're like, when are we going to actually see the highlights of our game? But Palace haven't won at Selhurst Park since October. They haven't won in six games. Do you think the manager saw it as an opportunity to go and play a rotated side and still get a result? And what did you think when you saw that lineup?
Yeah, I do. And I think it's not the first time. I know we played a very rotated lineup. I think it's last season when we played them early on in the season at Anfield. And it was, I think, you know, everybody was quite shocked that day. And we, you know, we do manage to get the win, even though we play badly. And I do think Klopp has different plans for different teams. And he's sort of quite horses for courses like that. And I wouldn't be at all surprised if you're right with that. And that is, you know, it wasn't one that I was particularly cross about when I saw the lineup. Apart from the you know, the missing Darwin, I thought that team should have enough. The mental aspect is the thing that's hard to kind of predict, isn't it? Why do we end up seeing the same sort of game again that we've seen several times away this season? As a fan, just to touch on what you've just asked Rob and Jake, as a fan, the Madrid thing on the night felt mad, and then as the days went on, it just felt worse. I ended up being really quite annoyed.
It's the worst I felt at Anfield for a really long time, like as the goals kept going in, and yeah, you're just watching it like, I want this game to actually end. Like, I haven't felt that bad that many times this season where I'm like, please can this game just be finished now?
Yeah. I think both games, both the Real Madrid game and the Palace game and other games this season, and it's probably because of this, that because of what I've seen, I've thought at half time this could get worse, you know, and that's a feeling I have this season. Obviously it did against Real. I said to Ben at half time and that game, we could do with scoring twice now, because I feel like they're going to score twice. And against Palace, I thought this is another one of those first halves where, oh, we've got out of it at 0-0 and then we end up getting beat 2-0 or something. So, you know, that doesn't happen. But the mentality, I can only sort of speak for myself as a fan, but I don't think it's probably too far off. I think the Real one will have cut deep and sort of been a bit of a lasting one that's hard to shake for all sorts of reasons. I mean, it's not over is another one. You know, you can't really sort of put it up to bed because it isn't. We've got to go and play them again.
Don't remind us.
Oh no, but you know, that's just one of the things. So, I mean, I think you can kind of see the fragility and the brittleness in certain of our players' faces this season. You know, especially some of the defence, and it's sort of as Rob's just pointed out, it's a bit harsh to pick on the defence. Really, the Palace do get some chances that come from mistakes, and is that just normal? It does seem to happen, and it's probably always happened to Klopp's Liverpool. It's just that we're mentally strong, and we don't let it bother us. We go up the other end of the score, or we just do deal with it, and then, you know, like a tennis player, turn around and just play the next shot. So, but having said that, I do think you can sort of see on you know, Trent's and Matip's faces, they're the two that sort of spring to mind, that there is a fragility there. We've seen precarious, and yeah, despite a lot of positives that I've had in the league recently, and the wanting to be positive, which I always want to accentuate the positive, we do find ourselves in a game which was by halfway through the first half seemingly quite predictable. Everybody was just basically saying it's a terrible game. You know, I was looking on Twitter, there was hardly any updates, and like it just grinds and grinds on, and various ways ends up fizzling out, which we'll get onto. So it's, I don't know. There is a lot to talk about, but possibly not in a footballing sense.
I haven't even introduced anyone, but you've heard from everyone now. Right, you've got Jake Nolan, Adam Miller, and Rob Cutman in the room. I'm Eric Pryor. Rob, I'll come to you on this one. We were talking about some of the chances that we conceded, and you're playing a team. Palace don't start anyone who scored more than two goals this season, so they've not got a particular goal threat. But my God, we didn't half give them some encouragement, did we? And didn't really try and make them score a goal. You have 30 minutes in, Trent gives the ball away to Marteta, he gets a chance, Matip plays it into a horrible area a bit later on. They hit the crossbar in the second half. It was another game where luckily they didn't capitalise on them, but again, there were so many gifts given away by the defence.
I hadn't realised there was that many. I remember the one where somebody hit the bar when Trent was muscled out of possession. I would echo what Adam said, though. There was no more chances there than in any of the games we've played against them in recent years. They usually get a goal against us there. Having said that, I thought that was as weak as I'd seen them. We look at small positives. We dominated the game. But I think the issue is we really rarely lack enough potency in forward positions. Yes, we've had moments of it recently against Everton. We look good. We had that 20, 30 minutes against Real Madrid. What am I missing in between? Who was after the Everton game?
Newcastle.
Against Newcastle. Yeah, again, some spells, but not enough. And when that team was announced on Saturday afternoon, my heart sunk that Nunes wasn't in there, because we just don't have goal threats. We've never really had goal threats from midfield. So whatever their form is, they're not the guys who are going to get us goals. Set pieces used to be a thing for Liverpool, but we're not defending them particularly well or attacking them particularly well. So you're relying on a front three. And there's no goals in that front three. Salah actually had one of his better games, I thought, for a while. And he was bright and lively. He did look much more of a goal threat than he has done this season. But Gakpo, I mean, he's good. It may be a long, slow process, but he definitely didn't look like the player I think they intended to sign on Saturday. I don't want to damn a new signing. And there were some really encouraging things from him against Everton and Newcastle, not least goals. But he looked utterly unlikely to be a game changer on Saturday. Firmino and Jota came on, laboured, huffed and puffed and were active. But again, I don't think they're serious elite-level goal threats anymore, really. So a Liverpool side, a Liverpool forward line looks to me, it should have Diaz in it, it should have Nunes in it, it should have Salah in it. You put those three against any defence in the world and I'm excited, and I think there's goals in it. But without them, just one of them, an out-of-sorts sort of Salah, I looked at it from kickoff and went, nil-nil wouldn't be the worst result here, because I can see us having a frustrating day and not coming close to scoring. And although we had a couple of moments, it was sort of that. And this is what feeds on to the confidence thing. So the defenders, you know, their mistakes are amplified, because there's no chance of anything. If they get it seriously wrong and we can see, there's little chance of it being rectified at the other end of the pitch. Injuries have killed this season as much as anything else. And injuries begat bad results, begat falling confidence, and you're into the negative cycle. And this is what we've seen. But injuries can end eras. I saw it in the Graham Souness for a debut season way back in 91-92. We had the biggest injury crisis I can ever recall as a Liverpool fan. It did for Liverpool. We finished eighth that season, and it more or less sowed the seeds for doing for him and the end of our era. So unless we can sort out the injury side of things, God fucking help us.
I want to come back to you on one of the things, and then we're going to go on to Nunes afterwards. But you mentioned Jota there and not anymore maybe being a goal threat. Is that not a bit harsh? You not just think he's finding his feet and his fitness after an injury? And I guess that keeps happening. He does keep getting little knocks where he's out for a period of time. But we have seen him be the person you can rely on to pop up with goals out of nowhere.
Yeah, but some time ago that happened. Same with, not quite the same with Mo Salah. Mo Salah's got a respectable amount of goals this season. Diogo Jota did really well for us in particular up until the end of Salah and Mane going away for AFCON last season. He popped up with a couple of crucial goals and really good performances in January last year. Since then, he's had injuries to contend with, but his form has not been anywhere near consistently impressive for me, and he hasn't looked a goal threat. I'm not saying Jota hasn't got a goal in him, but I think Jota is a very good player, but he needs to be in a good team for me, with people, there's lots of movement around him, and he's not a player who has a huge amount of touches, for example, so you need his goal return. So if you're not getting his goal return, it worries me. Now, of course, he's just back from injury, so before I become the guy who's slagging off Diogo Jota, patience is the watchword here. But I do worry that he isn't. If I think of the golden age of our front three, and it is beginning to be something we talk about as in the past now, of peak Mane, peak Salah, peak Firmino, I don't think Jota's at that level. I think he's a good squad option to have, and I know everyone loves the song, and I sometimes think he's better because he's got a great song. I would like, by next season, I would like a fit Diaz, Nunes and Salah. And I think I'd like one other who's nearly as good as them, because I don't think Gakpo, Jota and Firmino are anywhere near as good as Diaz, Nunes and Salah. On popular opinion, maybe. Who knows?
Well, I'm going to talk about Nunes because I've got some stats here, Jake, from what we are performing like when he is involved and when he isn't involved. So Liverpool in the Premier League this season, when he started, 54% win rate, 17.7, so basically 18 shots per game and a 1.93 XG per game. And when he's not starting, that drops to a 30% win rate, 14.6 shots per game and a 1.6 XG per game. A lot of these are skewed also by the fact that he didn't start Bournemouth, but we won 9-0. So the fact that when he's not, the stats when he's not starting would have been even worse if that Bournemouth game didn't happen. He's a glaring absence, isn't he, when he's not in the team? And it's strange, actually, because people were sacking him off, weren't they, for a lot of the season, saying he wasn't settling into the team well. And now there's a glaring gap when he's not starting, that we just lack that goal threat, lack that target man. And it's difficult to play without him now, isn't it?
Yeah, he almost became our best player when he had appeared out the team at the start of the year, didn't he? Everyone started to realise that, you know, he did offer us something, and he was getting sort of plenty of criticism before that. But one thing he's always shown is plenty of enthusiasm. You know, he's got blistering pace, puts himself about, doesn't he? And I think at times when we've looked devoid of any sort of positive, really, in terms of plan or in shape, you know, one thing that he's offered us maybe the past sort of 6 weeks or so is real width on that left-hand side and a real way to get in behind that perhaps, you know, Mo Asminov is on the other side and the Gakpo is not that same type of player. So yeah, he's a clear miss, and it was a shame, really, because I actually thought the periods, especially first half, Real Madrid was probably as good as I've seen him play, to be honest with you, you know, with the Everton game and the Newcastle game. But perhaps it was no coincidence that he didn't play because of the Anderson thing with Crystal Palace as well. I thought, you know, sort of 8 o'clock away from home at Selhurst Park, you know, there might have been a little bit of Jürgen thinking, you know, this has got an occasion written all over it, really, especially on the back of the Real Madrid game. So potentially protect them with the injury of the shoulders as well. But yeah, we need to see Darwin back in the team. But just following on from that, I also think we need to see a fit and fired Diego Jota as well. You know, I agree with some of Rob's points there, but there's times when we've seen him play, which has been as good as any Liverpool forward in the Klopp era, I think, and his goals to game ratio at times has been brilliant as well. So we need them all fit and firing, basically, don't we?
Yeah, absolutely. I think every time this season you think you're starting to get back on track, another knock comes, and that was Nunes at the weekend. Missed a lot of big chances, Adam. Gakpo one where the keeper comes out, he sends it wide. But the one for me that just sums up the season is the Trent free kick, where it just hits Henderson's head. And you think, if you look at that on the replay, every angle that looks like it's going in, that just felt like our season summed up, didn't it, in a shot?
But there is one particular angle where you can just see, just net.
Do you see how gutted the players are? They know that's in, yeah. But for the fact it hits Jordan's head.
Yeah, and it is, as you say, it does sum the season up, and it's one of them things, I guess, where you make your own luck, and we're doing the opposite of making our own luck at the moment, because, you know, because we don't kind of have that belief, and when you're in that mode of thinking we just need something to bobble in off someone's knee, then it never happens, because you can't force that. So yeah, I mean. Rob said before that his heart sank when he saw no Darwin on the team sheet, and I guess because it was the same for me, your heart leapt when you saw Darwin in the team sheet against Real.
100%.
So you know, because I was the same. Really, really concerned that he was not going to be there on Tuesday night, and made up when I saw him when I saw that he'd made it. He is the main man, and he's sort of gone from. It's a bit difficult because it's a crap season, isn't it? And you need a main man, you need a folk hero in a season like this. I remember we had a crap season again under Benitez, and I just liked Momo Sissoko for a year. He's more than a folk hero, and I think probably that's what Jake was alluding to when he sort of has that period out, and you see what you're missing. And yeah, I don't want us to become a team that's relying on a main man. It is a bit of an issue that, and you know, we've seen it many times in the past. And I don't think we do necessarily. I think Rob's right. I think if we've got, you know, one or two others back, it doesn't have to be that way. And I think he'll look all the better when everyone else is fit. It's not just kind of, you know, a spearheaded thing where
I think you need two out of that trio I said of Diaz, Nunes, and Salah.
Yeah, if
you got at least two on the pitch, right? It's like if when Firmino was out, if we had Salah and Mane, if we had Mane and Firmino, but down to one, it's a significant weakness.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm with Jake really around the Jota thing, because I sort of have to, because I've been saying all season we're really missing a particular thing of Jota, which is not particularly doing much and then just banging the first goal in. And I really think he's not far off. There's fine margins, and there's nothing really in his to stop that from happening straight away. It just hasn't quite come off yet, but I don't see why it wouldn't be back. It's not like a Firmino thing where he's older and you can see that he hasn't got his powers as he once had. I think Jota is any minute away from potentially snapping back in and just being that player that can just head one in or just boot one in out of nowhere in his sort of distinctive style. So I agree. Yeah, it'd be great to see any two of those of those three back. But I think Jota can be that person. It's such a strange one to talk about, isn't it? Because he does have a chance, Jota, which he heads from against the post from a really narrow angle. Is that a narrow and
I feel the word is oblique, but I'm not sure I've got it wrong.
Yeah, let's not go down that cul-de-sac. It would have been a very Jota sort of goal that, and I think he's still getting in the positions. I thought the same when he made his first reappearance against Everton. Was it? He's still in all the same positions. He's just not quite there, and it's the sort of the width of a post away. And it's a funny game to talk about because it's a classic 0-0. Really, they could win. And we'd be completely on the floor. Or we could have won. He could have slotted that. Or Gakpo could have put in it. It's quite a similar sort of technique that he uses for his goal against Newcastle, which at the time I thought it's a bit lucky that's gone in. And so it's the same situation, but it doesn't go in against Palace. He does look a bit leaden, doesn't he? So we could score one of our chances, the Salah one, the Trent one, obviously, which is devastating, or Palace could score. But instead, it's a classic sort of straight line face 0-0 discussion where it's, you know, you move on and you see how bad or good it was based on the next things that happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you mentioned Jota there hitting the bar. Salah did as well, and a nice stat on Squawker that no side has hit the woodwork more this season than Liverpool in the Premier League. So you talk about our luck not coming in. That's
joking,
another example,
really?
Of it, yeah.
Do you know when that was last a thing? And it still plagues me to this day. In Dalglish's last season as manager, he just signed all those players and we just weren't getting the... It's a very similar season to this, quietly, that one, by the way. We were hitting the woodwork more than any side had ever done in the history of the game. And it got to a point where you could cite that, and then by the end of the season, people were going, oh, for fuck off about the woodwork, would you? That just shows your shit.
It's worrying, though, that you've mentioned Souness's last season and Dalglish's last season.
Yeah,
well,
it's like all the greats, this one, isn't it?
It's a dog
of a season.
As you were saying before, that there is the elements, and I've been thinking it for a few weeks, the elements that when you look back on it, you could say, well, that was the end of an era. You know, there's things that are happening now which feel a bit end of an era.
Well, I was thinking the Real Madrid game, the exact same thing.
Do you know what game before? This from? Sorry, as it came out. Do you remember there was a game near the end of the Julio era, where we draw 0-0 with somebody like Leicester away, and I was there as I was at the Palace, and just thinking, this is just depressing. It wasn't just that it was not the right result. It's a very sterile performance, really. I mean, look.
We'd been used to some sterility. I think that's why Julio lasted as long as he did.
Yeah, well, that was
the whole thing was sterile.
His superpower was sterile and then get a goal, right?
Yeah.
But a Klopp Liverpool does not suit sterile because you know it's not going to lead to something good. Klopp's Liverpool, that, you know, I remember when Klopp came to Liverpool and lots of people giving their opinions or comments on what we should expect from Klopp. And Rafa Honigstein, who'd followed his career, obviously in Germany, said, look, you'll do well with Klopp, he's brilliant, and he'll change the whole culture of the club. But occasionally you'll get beaten 4-0. And people went, what's that all about? And for a while we didn't really see. Then occasionally that does happen. I think the Real Madrid game is another one of those examples where we were about to play well, but we forgot to in the second half and lost 4-0. But when it's like that, where if Liverpool play like that again, it's just going to be, we're going to have a lot more 0-0s to sit in front of. You go, this is just not Klopp's Liverpool. I don't know. I can go really, really both ways on this one. There's no analysis of it where I go, that was good. But there's analysis where I go, it's not the end of the world, that one. It could prove a valuable point. If we can beat Wolves, we'll put it down as a better point because we'll go with 1-3 and draw one of our last few. And if we beat Man United as well, we'll go, oh, Palace was all right, you know. Of course, winning 4, drawing 1, that's no big deal at all. So you can, and your hands are clean sheet, so you can talk yourself into it. As I said, players missing. But the other side of it is, this feels more a typical Liverpool performance from this season than the two wins we had, or the 20 minutes against Real Madrid, and that's what's worrying. I don't know. It's really hard to make sense of. As I said, I keep saying to myself, but injuries. But that's our reality. We're a club that gets injuries. We don't seem to be able to fix that.
The starting 11 at the weekend was close to the age of 30. And I think...
Was it?
Yeah, and that came across, probably one of the things you can point out that came across in the performance, because there was a distinct lack of creativity, wasn't there? Or at least progressive passing or trying to do something and move energy. Forward. A lack of energy. And I think maybe that's something you can look at. Yes, all the injuries, but there was younger players on the bench. Jake's decision not to start by Cetic was a strange one, I would say. I've got Michael Olise got past Liverpool's midfield and defence five times without being stopped until he came on the pitch as a substitution. There's a running theme of letting the opposition kind of play to their strengths and letting them control the pace of the game. And I thought, particularly in that midfield area, it was kind of like, oh yeah, you have a go, see what sticks, and we'll give you all the room you want, and then hopefully that you don't score the goal. But I thought the glaring thing in that midfield was that he wasn't playing, and he's an 18-year-old kid, and we shouldn't be relying on him. But so is the state of our season at the moment.
Yeah, it's ultimately where we are, hasn't he? And he's set his own high standards now and showed how important he is for us to play. I mean, I think what Liverpool have been quietly dealing with all season, potentially you could say throughout last season and even potentially throughout Klopp's era, is that I think he's got about 12 players that we can hang our hat on and he can hang his hat on. But once you look past that, you know, that's when we seem to really struggle. And, you know, I can understand why he took him off the firing line the weekend. You know, he's come off the back of some tough games there, particularly the Real Madrid game and so many games in so many days. And at the end of the day, he's only, what was he, 18?
Yeah.
At some point, his legs will fall off, and that's what we don't want. And you know, going into sort of big games coming up, you know, we need to get him as fit and as full of energy as possible, and potentially away from home at Palace. He just sort of... as a way for a go of experience with Milner instead. But again, there lies the problem, is you know, we don't have cover like City do, or even like Arsenal do at the moment, where they can drop a midfielder out and seamlessly replace him with somebody who's equally as good, as the same level of experience and same sort of type of player. We just don't have that squad depth. So we are relying on 18-year-old players, or we are relying on somebody who was deemed not to be good enough a month ago, but now is our most important player. It's just, it swings and roundabouts with how it's fallen at the moment. And again, story of the season, isn't it?
Yeah, and he does put Naby in, Adam, and he then takes him off at half time. He's on a yellow card, and maybe that plays into the decision to drag him off. What did you make of his performance in the first 45 minutes?
Shite.
Yeah. He's an unpredictable player, and I think that's why Klopp doesn't like him. I'm convinced Klopp doesn't like him, but there's been, you know, just based on how often he plays him, he doesn't want to play him, does he, ever really? Despite my feeling of his good qualities, and you know, I do quite like what he has brought in the past, although not recently. I think he had a good season last season. I felt like I spent the whole of last season sort of sticking up for him, because he'd quietly been playing in every single one of the games that we'd been playing well in, and I think we really missed him, or somebody like him, at the start of this season. But he's come back and he hasn't been predictable. I think he's a strange sort of midfielder, even at his best. He's sort of mercurial, but he is not doing himself any favours in terms of, this is it, for some players, that, you know, the time when they're really showing their best, because he is due a new deal or a move. He's not showing himself at any sort of shot window for me, and yeah, just really, really poor. And I feel for him a little bit, because he is he's the boo boy kind of thing, isn't he? He is the one that gets all the stick. And that must be a pressure, because you can kind of feel that your first mistake is going to get pounced on. But in another way, I just don't think he's done enough, and I think he could do with being a bit more reliable and a bit more predictable. Some of that goes back to injuries. I think his biggest issue the whole time he's been here for me is that he's a slow healer, and I can't stand slow healers. We've got too many of them. We looked much better once he went off. Probably I've just said in 2 minutes what Jake said in half a second.
No, but I think the thing with Naby is, just to push in is for a second, is I don't think, you know, we can sit here and we've done it loads in gutters or in, you know, sort of post-match or whatever, and kind of questioned his you know, his performances, or sometimes he's been brilliant. But I think the biggest thing that you've got to question with Naby is, is ultimately to sign in the first place. It's a big price tag, and he's never in a million years a Klopp profile midfielder. It's really hard to play for Klopp's midfield, as you can see by the latitude playing at the moment. They look absolutely knackered. The legs have fallen off, and he's just not that profile of player, and he never was. So again, if he's brought in to bring us something different, and he hasn't, and he's struggled with injuries, you know, that, again, that's not his fault. But what I will say is, I'm just fed up of seeing it. It's like watching the same bad episode over and over and over. And again, he will throw in a good performance every now and again because he's a good midfielder, but it's just never going to work.
Could you see what Klopp was trying to do, bringing Elliot on? Did you think that worked better in the second half?
Well, again, I'm not Harvey's biggest fan, but what I will say is he'd probably be a Liverpool player for the next 5 years, or at least that's the plan. I don't think you can say the same about Naby.
The other substitutions, Rob, he took Gakpo off in the second half. He brought Brejcic on. Do you think there was a point in the game where they just thought, a point's fine here, let's just get away from this ground and not lose?
Yeah, I 100% do think that. That is something, quietly a Klopp thing at times, where you do spot, he goes, if we're not playing well and it's got to 60, he will often go, do you know what, let's take... There's a part
I
of
think
him,
he's done that before the game.
Do you think? Yeah. He pre-plans if we get to 60, yeah. I wish he hadn't. I wish we'd just sort of gone mad and tried to score, quite frankly. But I think we did. I think we did deal on that, because there was a point as that game was sort of ebbing towards its closure where you could, and this is where I would defend the manager. You could see them nicking it just as easily as we could from a set piece or what have you. And I think we come out of it with them nicking it, and I think he knows everyone's on the floor. I think we'd won 1-0. I think this show would be, wasn't that like an earnest, good away point? Didn't we do well? It shows we're more solid these days, but we got our goal, we controlled the game. But I don't think we'd have been ecstatic. I think we'd have been, okay, and now we go on. But I think had we lost, even if it was undeservedly, we'd lost. Especially in the last 20 minutes of the game, I think everyone would be on the floor and everyone got this. I think what we'd be talking about today, now, and I know we're going to talk about the summit, we'd all be talking just about tearing it up and starting again, about it all being utter shite. Forget about the Champions League. We've only got a point more, but we still feel like we haven't truly dented our Champions League hopes with that point. It feels like it's okay. It's okay. That's not a problem. But defeat would have been a tragedy, really. And I think that's in his thinking.
I'm pretty sure at the end of the game he said it's a sort of point gained. I'm sure he said something along the lines. I was reading the comments, and I honestly feel like we're maybe probably scooting over just how much of a big job he probably had on his hands picking that team up after Real Madrid through the week, and the fact that, you know, he's looking at it, we're looking at going Palace struggling, you know, we're going to go there, hopefully get 3 points when the march is on for top four, but he's probably looking at it going 8 o'clock away from home at Palace with their fans, and you know, they've done us at Anfield, I'll come away there with a point. And I know that's not what we want to hear, but ultimately that's probably where we are at the moment.
Well, yeah, and he mentioned as well that that's kind of the trajectory of our season, where we're used to winning every game at the moment because of the nature of the players we've got available and the form. There is going to be games where you drop points, and that's okay, and you've got to keep moving forward and looking at the positives and drawing them out of it. Adam, though, if I'm going to be a bit critical, and I'm fine with the point generally, and like you said, we'll kind of know how important that was after the Wolves game and after the United game. The body language for me at times was a bit negative, and I don't know if you agree on that or whether you kind of think that was just the nature of the game and how it just sort of stagnated as it went on. But there was times where I thought, particularly with missed chances, the heads went down a little bit. I thought they could have been more closing down and in a defensive area. Sometimes it looked a bit passive. Did you feel the body language was that way, or were you generally fine with it?
I feel like, no, you're definitely right. And it's not something that it's been something that's been levelled at Liverpool for the whole season, and I haven't really thought it's been there. But I did see it start to creep in the other day, and I'm hopeful that it could have been, as Jake said, it was just a big job to pick them up. But yeah, it's
a big job to pick all of us up.
I know, that's what I was saying. It just kept getting worse, really. The feeling after that game on Tuesday. So, it's hard, isn't it? Because you need to be feeling good to make good things happen, and you need good things to happen to make you feel good. So we found ourselves in a bit of a... It was just a funny one, the way it sort of ground down, you know, as a game. And I didn't think they were the body language kind of got worse as it went on. I just thought it was sort of they just looked a bit pissed off, to be honest, all the way through. And our sort of chief cheerleaders were there doing their job. And I think that's a criticism I saw from, I don't know whether it might have been you on Twitter during the game. I don't know, somebody anyway, somebody handsome.
I think I had about four pints.
But yeah, about how the kind of leadership's not there. You know, we've got our elite players and our leaders, and they're there really. You know, but they're mostly there, aren't they? The leaders and the architects of the team, and that was. It was missing somebody to make them snap out of it mentality wise, and you can understand why. God, they've been how many body blows have we received this season? So I think it is important to try and keep a level head, and I think that's what Klopp's done probably better than everybody else, as usual really, better than the fans, better than the players, because as Harriet said, it's not over by any means. We're not going for the league, and it is, I think I've said this on a show a couple of times, it's easier to get in the top four than it is to win the league. You don't have to win every game. You just need to not let it get you down. You need to keep plodding on, and the teams that you're competing with are less good than the one you're competing with.
Tottenham
to win the league.
Are the prime example, I think. They look shit in the middle.
They've been crap for ages, and they're still well in it, aren't they?
Yeah,
and they've sort of had a good result yesterday, and I think you'd probably say the same about us. I'd still give us a really good chance, as long as nobody else sort of turns it around better than we do. It's about whether we can do that. And also, I do think we just need to be aiming towards what team we're going to have next season. I was thinking of really when you were talking about Bajcetic, because he's surprised everybody. And I think that yes, you can overplay young players and you can burn them out, but I think he is probably in next season's team. He's going to be one of the main options for that midfield, not starting every week probably. And we really hope we'll get some signings there, but I think he's in it, and it's been the shining light of the season, I suppose. It wasn't what you want, body language wise, but you know, I back Klopp all day to have them back up, and you know, thankfully we've got a very familiar team up next in Wolves that we seem to be
played them about 25 times.
We're not allowed to stop playing them until we beat them.
Yeah, there might be a replay for the Premier League game. Yeah. Rob, let's talk about the summer, because the manager's made some interesting comments off the back of FSG saying it won't be a sale and they're looking for investors rather than a majority sale or whatever the technical terms are. Klopp was talking and he was asked about Champions League money and whether it would make a drastic difference on summer spending if they made top four, and he said it's not helpful if Liverpool miss out on top four. Money always has an impact, but this cannot be that much of an impact. Let me say it like this. Of course it is influential, but this is a summer where we have to be in the market, definitely. What do you make of those comments?
I was pleasantly shocked, I think, because I thought it was as forthright as I've ever heard him. I mean, he's clever with his use of language, I think, Klopp, considering it's not his first language. He will always steer away from ever admitting that Liverpool need reinforcement, because by implication, you are damning those who are already there. And that's his whole modus operandi, is the solidarity with those who are here. And he wants to, you know, they're all in it together. That's how he manages. That's how he leads, how he builds their belief. And I've never heard him deviate from that approach. But this was a deviation. Okay, he doubled back on himself a little bit. He goes, but hey, we can't do anything about it now, and we're all in this together. We can still have a good season, blah, blah, blah. But he couldn't hide his own words, and he can't hide the obvious truth, and nor should he try to, which is this Liverpool team squad needs substantial strengthening. I think he was, there's a hint in that quote you gave that he wasn't going to let the owners or the money men off the hook by dint of the fact that we might not qualify for the Champions League. He was saying there's a price on the ticket to get us back up to where we need to be, which is which is strong favourites to qualify for Champions League next season, and that can't be affected by whether we get in there this season or not. They have to be bold. I think there was that's the subtext of a lot of what he was saying. Because if you fail to get in the Champions League, you go, well, we haven't got the money to get in the Champions League, so we're going to have to spend less money. Well, here's the outcome. You won't get in the Champions League the season after, or you'll be very lucky to. You're not likelier to get in the Champions League by reacting to not getting into it by spending less. Sorry, Harriet.
No, I was going to say also not qualifying for the last few seasons hasn't had a drastic impact on who we have brought in. It's not like we've qualified and they've brought in loads of players. Like seasons after we've won stuff, they've just brought in one player in the summer. So it's not like that's going to have a drastic difference anyway.
Quite. And with our rivals who were desperate to get back in the Champions League, some of them doing better at it than others, they have spent Champions League getting back into money. So we have to do that. I mean, it does...
Good phrase. I know. Next title,
I mean,
of a gutter.
It does. I mean, they're outside of just going throw money at the situation, there's obviously more nuanced conversations to be had about how you throw that money at the situation, how strategically you do it. On the one hand, I think we all want to see Liverpool spend big, but I think on the other hand, we'd like to see Liverpool spend a bit cuter as well. Sure, we'd all like a Jude Bellingham, but if Liverpool are going to go down the route of going, we only want someone who's a sure thing, or we're not going to buy and we'll only buy one player this summer, then we're not having that, thank you. I think we're happy for them to buy £10 million Ecuadorians, you know? We need numbers. To pick on a Moises Caicedo who's cost 10 million from Ecuador or so.
It's making me laugh, by the way. You've got a 10 million Ecuadorian in mind. Go on. But,
it's making me laugh that everyone thinks that there's like hundreds of Moises Caicedos knocking around now just because Brighton got one.
No, but there's. But Klopp actually said in that interview, Harry, that you've quoted from, he just said, we need really good players. Fortunately, there's a lot of really good players out there. Again, I wondered, is that another coded message to the team that do the buying? That
definitely.
There's a lot of them out there. You don't have to just not buy someone. There's this mantra, and I'll shut up in a minute, this mantra that Tom Werner put into place quite early in Klopp's reign. I think it was, actually, was it into Klopp's reign? No, not into Klopp's reign, it was before Klopp's time, actually. It was on the back of that first big spend-a-thon of a summer they did under Dalglish, which didn't go well because we bought people like Downing and Andy Carroll and so on and so on. Werner said in an interview, it's as important what we don't spend as what we do spend. And that sort of became a bit of a watchword, I think, for them. And I think you've seen it be framed as a common sense approach, really, because we buy a Virgil van Dijk or we don't buy anyone. We buy no one or we wait for Konate. And generally, in the last 5 years, the results have justified the means. But I think we're beginning to get to the stage where doing nothing is not an option because there's too many in the current squad who are not at the level and can't be trusted to stay consistently at the level we require. I think the surgery we need in the summer, and I'll finish quick on this point, is I think we need to make at least 4 top-class signings. They don't have to cost £80 million each, but there needs to be 4 players we think can go into our first 11 when needed.
So many emergency gutters on the horizon.
So many. Can't wait. So little time.
Jake, Rob says four players. How much change do you expect to happen in the summer?
Plenty. Not only just personnel, but potentially just the way that we go about things as well. You know, to kind of follow that sentence on with an adage, I think it's as much about who's coming in rather about the change mentality. The difference that we've got now, I think Jürgen has always kind of towed that company line with FSG. You know, we've talked about it loads. It lines with his values, how he is as a manager. But the big sort of elephant in the room was there was no Newcastle spending that much money. There was no Chelsea. There was no this and that and the other. And, you know, Jürgen must be looking at it going, we've got to do more to bring us up to the levels that we need.
He does reference the other teams in the league spending more money now, yeah.
Exactly that. So I think it's a case of that. And, you know, we've had this sort of perfect scenario where players have left Liverpool and it's almost a bit like, it's a bit cute and it's a bit like, oh, Adam Lallana, pat on the back type of thing. We've had it with a couple of other players where I think there's an element of needing, there's players now who aren't performing who maybe just need to be shipped out a bit more. And you know, we've been hanging on for a couple of years with a couple of them and we need to kind of go in. I mean, if you're asking me where do we need to sign, it's pretty much all over the pitch, isn't it? You know, especially the spine of the team and obviously in midfield. But yeah, I would love to see not only a change of personnel, but a change of mindset as well.
Yeah, Adam, the thing is they're going to have to be a shift of players out. And that's one thing that Klopp has mentioned, is that when you're winning trophies and you're doing really well, there's not many players putting their hands up and asking for a move or wanting to get away. think they're going to have to be a little bit more ruthless in their approach and a bit sentiment-free in terms of just getting a few players out the door that aren't contributing as much now?
Absolutely, and I think you know it's too late. Obviously, it's too late. You know this is the horse has bolted, isn't it? You know he spent we spent and Klopp spent. I don't want to blame Klopp, but you know the build up to last summer. You know, Oxlade-Chamberlain waving to people. You know, Tarari's off, and you know, and then halfway through the summer, there's a complete shift, and he's getting talked up as, you know, he could be an option, and it's maddening, to be honest, because this is for me, it's I can't even think how many seasons too late it is, but. You know, there's been a huge lack of succession planning probably since we won the Champions League. I'd go back as far as that, certainly since we won the league. And it has led to it's a shambles, I think. It's a total mess, what we've kind of seen. A totally predictable mess. And, I've been sitting on Rob's shows predicting predicting doom. Mm. And there's certain things that you can point out to say, well, it hasn't been a mess that whole time. Last season felt a little bit built on sand in a way to me. You know, we are obviously nearly to the Holy Grail and the Promised Land, but we're also we looked knackered and we, you know, sort of as it proved, we kind of don't, you know, we don't get over the line. I think Liverpool probably need to win everything by absolutely miles, otherwise they're not going to win anything at all. What do we need? I know. Apart from a time machine, we need to be more, much more ruthless. Because even, I mean, it remains to be seen, doesn't it? The ones that are going to go are the ones that whose contracts are running out. I'll be surprised if we see more ruthlessness, but pleasantly so. And yeah, in terms of Klopp's comments, what is he doing? Is he, if he's just doing the thing of saying in February there's a big war chest in the summer, then that's really annoying because that's supposed to cheer us up as fans, and I've just been hearing it for years.
He's saying they need to work early.
Yeah.
Again, you can't tell whether he means have they started or he's putting pressure on.
So that's what I was going to say, Rob.
Sorry, mate.
I was going to say, I don't think he's doing that, though. I think he's putting pressure on the owners, which is one thing where I would, you know, as a big Benitez person, I like it when managers put pressure on owners, and I think it's something he could have done more of. So when people talk about who's to blame, I don't think Klopp's necessarily to blame for, you know, not getting XYZ player or not, you know, being too loyal. There is something in that. But I think probably there's been times where he's realised too late. At middle of last summer was a great example. Oh, I should have put a bit more pressure on them earlier on. And so hopefully that will continue to be his attitude. Keep the pressure on them.
And in breaking news, football can no longer govern itself, Rob. Are you shocked and surprised? No, we'll talk about the white paper review briefly, because that has come out in the last week, and it's basically the government setting out proposals for future legislation. And I don't think it's fully come out yet. I don't think anyone fully grasps what's happening, but some key elements included include an independent regulator for football, new tests for prospective owners and directors, and then also rules preventing clubs entering breakaway competitions. It's meant to put fans sort of back in the middle of it. It's broadly been well received as a positive step. Do you think it's about time that football has a bit more regulation over it and isn't just let to govern itself?
Yeah, I mean, regulation's overdue in the British game, but I don't know if there's any buts about that principle. We do need the regulation. There are things that aren't acceptable, not right. It's unfortunately, emotionally, it's very much after stable doors have closed, and those who've been taken over by sports washers and states, well, they're okay with, they're fine now. And also, it's what teeth the regulations are going to have. I think things have got to start getting harsh, and they've got to be able to have laws that aren't also endlessly appealable against. I mean, obviously, the allegations against Manchester City are looming large, not for the first time. So I'm, like I think most football fans, battle weary when I hear, we're going to clean this up, this is what's going to happen, you're not going to be able to do X, Y, or Z. I mean, look, there are, we tend to, because we, Liverpool, compete at the top end of the game, focus on the bigger issues and things like around FFP and which state is going to take over one of our rivals. But there are things down the line, I suppose, with, like, we're keeping an eye on owners, like owners who want to change the colour of kits that have been fundamental and move stadiums for no reason. So, and also compromise the what's the sustainability or the existence of clubs, as we've seen with like Bury and Bolton coming close and those sort of things. So, going further down the pyramid to the areas I'm not really interested in, if I'm truly honest, I think the regulation might protect those parts of the game more. At the top end of the game, it'll always I think be a wild, evil free for all. We're just going, I think, to be cynical about it, and I'm not confident the regulation will change anything. But you know, we live in hope.
Wild, evil, free for all—a lovely sentiment.
Good to watch, though.
They've said that it probably won't come in until at least the 25-26 season. So no, not 25-26 years. 25-26 season, which is what, two years, so we'll see.
Enough time for us to get taken over by some sort of sports.
Well, so my cynical hat is that I always said they'll bring in regulations as soon as a state looks like buying Liverpool.
Yeah.
But so Man United fans might be thinking the same thing. You know, Liverpool and Man United are the clubs which generate...
Waiting to be washed.
Well, no, but I mean, they're the biggest clubs, aren't they? And I think that the ones that generate the most fuss and you know, questions in the house are raised when things seem to involve those two clubs. So, you know, the cynical side of me says, well, yeah, this would happen just as Man United are just about to be bought by Qatar. And you're right, you know what, you need to be able to backdate this sort of thing. It's crazy that just because nobody cares about Man City, they can fly under the radar nonstop. It's maddening and insane, isn't it, really? I don't like thinking about it too much because it's the thing, you know, the thing that has been a big part of my life, football, is just, you know, they're just completely running roughshod over it, and if you think about it too deeply, you realise that there isn't much that there isn't anything really governance wise to hang your hat on in the whole thing. But
absolutely. Let's move on to Wolves, Jake, because we've got a game in 2 days' time, another game against Wolves. I want to just read out some of what Klopp said. He said after the game, "We keep going. We cannot suffer because of our own history. We have to go through it, take the things and go again. And that's what we'll do. Nothing really changed tonight. We have a point more than before." And that's what you were referencing earlier. But suddenly it does make Wolves a really big game, doesn't it? I wrote this yesterday, so not since Tottenham won, but a win I thought took us within 3 points of top four, but I now think it's Tottenham have won. That might be a little bit further ahead, but we've got games in hand. But there's no room for error against Wolves coming to Anfield, is there?
No, I only look at the table when we win as well.
Yeah.
So that's fine. I mean, the Wolves game, it's slightly infuriating, isn't it? Because it just feels like we played them about 25 times. And is it home or away? I'm away with where.
It's a neutral venue. It's in New York. They needed another game. Game 52 or
something. One of those Super Bowl games?
Yeah. Game 39.
I honestly can't keep up. But
Anfield.
And Anfield's like, okay, so... So hopefully that suits us being at home. But I think ultimately the big thing is that we just got to go and win. And I think that's what I was referencing on with the Crystal Palace game and come back in the Real game. I think he'll be looking at this game going, that's where we get our 3 points. And if we get 4 points out of Wolves and Crystal Palace, then we've probably done our job.
Let's pick a team then, Adam. I'll give you defence.
There's only one man I want to know about, and you know who he is, Adam, playing this game.
I'd probably go Bacetic, Henderson, Fabinho.
Oh, you've gone midfield. I asked for defence, but you've
gone midfield.
Oh, sorry,
I thought you said you'd give me... I
interrupted.
Oh, you're going to... All right.
No. Oh, sorry, yeah. Miscommunication. You go midfield, you give me the defence.
Oh, there's talk of Konate being available. He definitely trained last week. And if he's fit, I would put him back alongside Virgil. Trent has played a lot of football, and I think he might feel there is a case, especially with Man U coming up, to give him a rest or put him on the bench. So, same could be said of Andy Robbo. If there's a change at fullback, I'm going to guess at Milner starting ahead of Trent, but I don't think so. I think he'll have the blinkers on, because I think anyone who thinks, "Phew, we've got Wolves, I'm confident we'll get a result here," is an idiot, because this Liverpool team...
When we just lost 3-0 to them away.
Well, A, that. B, I mean, yes, it's a fixture we want because it's very, very winnable. But I'm confident about any game at the moment facing Liverpool. So, and I think Klopp will think, to an extent, I have to, although he did rotate against Palace, to an extent I have to put my blinkers on with this one and just focus on getting any kind of a win. So I think so the likelihood is he tends to go his best case, is optimistic. So he goes Trent and Robbo, and I think Konate comes back inside alongside Van Dijk.
Okay, and then who did you go in midfield, Adam? Sorry, again?
Bajetic, Henderson, Fabinho.
Yep, and then we're going into forward line. Hopefully Nunes is fit because I think he played with the injury against Madrid. They gave him an injection. Mm. So I imagine at the weekend they just sort of will give him a rest, but he will be available.
Yeah, I always think when we get to this part of the show and this season, you start to understand what it must be like to be Jürgen at this point. The point, because you're really, really picking a hard into nothing, aren't you? But I think we were talking about Jota before. He played his best football for me for Liverpool when he plays down the middle. So if we are going to stick with Jota and try and get him in form, I'd like to see him come in potentially for Gakpo, and then we bring Nunes back in. That's what I would do, but who knows?
Going to win?
Yeah, of course.
You're one of those people I was talking about. There's no of course about this.
I was thinking that I was one of those people as well when he said it, Rob. Yeah. Yeah. My answer is yeah, of course.
Rob, yeah, of course.
No, of course. Really hope so. We will be favourites, but there's no of course about this. Sorry, I'm normally the one who goes 5-0. But no, there's no of course. And I'm not trying to jinx anything or what have you. It's that kind of a season.
Well, I can't wait for a 5-0 win then, Rob. That would be lovely, wouldn't it? If you want more on the white paper review and on the summer spending, Rob, you're going to be doing a gutter soon, so there'll be plenty on that. And we've done plenty as well on the white paper review this week. And of course, we'll be looking ahead to Wolves on Wednesday night again. But the shows will be different because it's a different game and hopefully one that we can win. We've got all of that on the app, so just download it and you can get some free tokens as well. And the Amphorap team are also going to America in about, I want to say, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, lots of shows. Find out more on their Twitter, not from me because I don't really know the details, but if you are in America, get yourself some tickets and get yourself there. It's during the international break, so won't be much else to do. There's been no football on, and we could all probably do with a couple of weeks off anyway, couldn't we?
I'd love to go to America for the rest of the season. Oh, that'd be amazing.
Forever.
Forever will do.
Let's finish with a tea check. Have you done finished both your cups of teas?
No, the second one went cold on me. A bit like our season.
We'll end it there. Thank you so much for listening. And thanks to Andy for producing and for Sam doing the video as well. Sports Social Podcast Network.